This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary stranger. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Tom Warzeka and Derek Grassman from Cohelo Wind Turbines are standing by to discuss the future of wind energy and wind turbines. Just a reminder, second hour of this transmission, open lines, and our What's in the Box feature, our little remote viewing experiment. That's the second hour. And incidentally, for the remote viewing experiment, if you'd like to play it along at home for your chance to win some Conspiracy Show merchandise, use the hashtag TCS, the initials TCS, as in The Conspiracy Show. Remote, TCS remote. And as I say, that'll be the second hour. Let me introduce the boys in the band. On the Flying V Gibson guitar, our fine rockabilly friend, technical producer Ian Robertson. On the Rickenbacker bass guitar, occasionally the theremin, my story producer, Albert Vinzel. And on the Hammond B, our intern, Ryan White. And Ryan also doing yeoman's duty producing my weekly radio feature, Strange Planet. We are streaming live on YouTube tonight, so take a moment and subscribe to the YouTube channel, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. We are setting a goal of 10,000 subscribers sometime in 2017. I think that's very doable. So again, that's the YouTube channel, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett, and then you can either stream it live or you can go back and check out the archived version of the program. And please take a moment and check out the new Facebook page, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Follow me on Twitter, at Richard Serrett. From time to time on the program, we like to discuss energy technology, alternative energy, free energy, renewable energy, certainly. And wind turbines, it's kind of a divisive issue. People are very hot on wind turbines or they're kind of cool. I'll give you an example. In my hometown, Brantford, here in southern Ontario, in Brant County, they just passed a motion the other day, basically giving a thumbs down to the industrial wind turbine farms. There was one proposed in Brant County. It was going to be between 5 and 10 turbines, and it was going to generate something like 500 kilowatts, I guess. I'm not sure how many houses you could power with 500 kilowatts. And as I say, it's very divisive in communities for a number of reasons. They've been connected to a number of social and health and environmental concerns. But and I'm talking about these huge, huge industrial wind turbines, the vertical turbines that are just massive. And let's face it, they're a bit of an eyesore. And some people claim that the low frequencies they're producing can cause some health issues. We'll get into that a little bit. But my guests tonight from Cohelo Wind Turbines insists they've developed an innovative, the most innovative hybrid vertical axis wind turbine in the world. Derek Grassman has been a passionate member of the clean energy movement for over 12 years. As founder of Cohelo Wind, an inventor and mechanical engineer of the patented Cohelo turbines, he's determined to keep the company based in creativity in order to be a leader in high-performance clean energy solutions. And you can check out his TED Talk. If you go to the website, strangeplanet.ca, and then go on the radio page, right under Derek's name, you'll see a link. Just click on that, and you can watch his TED Talk, How Wind Energy Saved My Life. Derek Grassman, first of all to you, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good.
Great. And
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Tom Orzeka is also with Cohelo. Tom prides himself in producing creative-based, high-performance, clean energy products. And we're glad to have Tom with us as well. Tom Orzeka, welcome to you, sir.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much for having us. How's things in Toronto this evening?
It has been balmy, just wonderful spring-like weather for the last couple of days. So we're
here also.
Great. I'm sure we're going to get slammed again. Just we try not to get our spirits too high because we're going to get another couple of storms before all is said and done. But we'll enjoy the warm weather for the moment. Let me start first of all with you, Derek, because this is a rather provocative title: How Wind Energy Saved My Life. Tell me a little bit about that. How, pray tell, did wind energy save your life?
Well, I had a bit of a downturn on some aspects of my life. My daughter had passed away, and I had lost everything I owned, and I was living in the woods and had no power. I had to find a new way to survive, and it was, a long road, but ultimately it brought me down the path to understand and have no choice but to learn about clean energy and how to utilize it, on a micro level.
So, I'm terribly sorry about your loss, but you were left homeless. You were living in the woods. I mean, you were literally off the grid, but not by your choice.
Right. So I took that time to go to college and do a few things. A lot of people around me didn't realize that I was living in the woods, like while I went to college, and even while I was in the first stages of being a mechanical engineer out, in the firms where I worked. So I stayed that way so that I could apply the money I was making towards the R&D for the product.
All right. And what was the impetus, though? Why wind turbines? Why that?
I had a friend that introduced me to the solar and then a little bit of wind. So I had, a couple of these components on my land. And I seen that the solar wasn't really providing enough for me to sustain. The wind, it could, but only when the winds were, extremely substantial.
Right.
So the problem I seen with the wind is the turbine would track. It would try to follow the direction of the winds constantly. So you'd see the tail of this machine moving all the time, but the blades would never move. And I just, as a mechanical engineer, understanding a bit about physics, I just couldn't understand how there was enough energy in the wind to take the tail, reorientate this machine, but not enough wind to rotate the portion of the machine that was effectively harnessing the kinetic energy passing by. So in my mind, all I could see was this was an extremely ineffective design.
Right.
So
right.
There wasn't any way for me to really do a lot of development at that point in my life, but really what started happening was I was having some visions of basically what we have now. And what we have now is a system that conditions the wind, much like a hydro dam conditions the flow of water into a hydro generator.
Right. You say so you had visions. Sorry, Derek. This is fascinating. Yeah. You had visions. I've talked to a lot of inventors over the years, and this seems to be kind of a common denominator. One inventor described it to me this way, that first you invent it in the dream world. All inventions come from the dream world before they become manifest in the physical world. So you were what was going on? Were you having dreams, or how were these visions coming to you?
Well, you know, after I lost my daughter, I had to find my way a little bit, you know, with my faith. And really what ended up happening was I became kind of like a Buddhist. So, you know, I've done a lot of meditation, and basically, you know, what you were just referring to, what that inventor said, is absolutely true. You know, these ideas that we have on this very high level, really what I think it comes from is cumulative knowledge. It's us tapping into the subconscious. It's not that we, you know, I did not have the resources of 50 engineers in a few laboratories with wind tunnels trying to come up with the best design. But we've effectively pulled power from wind speeds that no one else has been able to come close to.
We'll get into that as well. Let me just remind listeners, Derek Grassman and Tom Orzeka are with us from Cohilo Wind Turbines. Let me get Tom in here. Tom, welcome again to the program. How did you hook up with Derek?
I was attending an exportation presentation put on by the local Syracuse Chamber of Commerce, and they had given me four products that they'd like me to export to specifically South America. And I went around to all the factories, and when I met Derek and saw what he had, I knew right away this was something unique. This was something that could solve a lot of people's needs. But also listening to your program, listening to you on Coast to Coast, George Norrie, Jimmy Church, all of you, when you talk about the needs of energy, it kind of clicked when I saw Derek's stuff. One of the big things that we all hear on the radio programs is about a solar flare or about the dictator in North Korea doing a pulse bomb. You know, probably others too, but those are strong possibilities. And not only does this solve that, being, you know, you can be either on the grid or off the grid, whichever you prefer, but it's also housed in aluminum. And aluminum actually acts better than lead in blocking radiation, whether it be solar or pulse bomb. So not only do you get the free energy, but you're also going to be protected in case any of those catastrophic things happen. And, you know, I've watched Derek, as he's progressed, we have a new product that we're going to roll out on Earth Day. We welcome you and all the listeners that come here to Syracuse, New York, specifically Skaney Atlas Falls. We're going to have our grand opening on Earth Day and unveil the new product. But in your talk earlier, you mentioned about Toronto and some negativity there.
Yes.
Let
me just jump in here, Tom, because I've got to take a timeout. Here comes the music. We'll get you to address some of the how your innovative wind turbine maybe addresses what some of the critics of wind turbines have or what they have to say about wind power. Derek Grassman, Tom Orzeka from Cohilo Wind Turbines, in and around Syracuse, New York, and we'll come back and discuss further and also open up the phone lines if you have questions or comments for Derek and Tom. The Conspiracy Show returns momentarily. Stay with us.
Where there's smoke, there's The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Loose lips sink ships, and sometimes corporations. Got something to say? Call Richard Serrett now at 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. Derek Grassman is with us along with Tom Orzeka from Cohelo Wind Turbines near Syracuse, New York. Check out the TED Talk, How Wind Energy Saved My Life. Quite a remarkable story from tragedy to inspiration. And we'll get into this unique or this innovative hybrid vertical axis wind turbine in just a moment. But Tom, you wanted to address what the critics, say about wind turbines. And for me, my experience with wind turbines, because yours is quite different, these are these massive vertical structures. And let's face it, they can be kind of an eyesore because they're so huge. And often they're placed in, coastal areas and so forth. Birds of prey have a habit of flying into the blades. And the other part is that some people, now this is very divisive, this issue, and Health Canada, I believe, says no, there's no known health concerns with these large vertical wind turbines, but people complain about dizziness and tinnitus and vertigo and nausea and visual blurring and so forth, tachycardia, those people that live near these industrial wind turbines. So let's talk about some of those issues and maybe how your innovative design addresses those.
Yes. So ours are vertical. Horizontal, if you will, are the big windmills that you just addressed. Ours have no external moving parts. Unlike the larger ones that you talked about, very little or no harmonics. We don't kill birds, maybe occasional mosquito or two.
I would welcome that. So in other words, you do not have the large, those blades, those large propeller type blades that are exposed.
Yeah, we have blades, but they're very, very small compared to those, and they're housed inside that aluminum housing that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
So
right.
When a bird sees those, he sees like a solid surface or a wall.
Okay. Right.
A solid object, if you will.
Right. I just wanted to point out on the YouTube on the live stream, if people want to see the images, they're up there now, that's. That's not your typical wind turbine that I would associate. A very, very novel design.
So for a home, you would put it on your roof or above the tree line. So you can either put it on like a tower type or pole type device or on your roof or your garage or barn roof. So ours are not very tall. The horizontal ones, as you know, probably go as high as 600 feet. Where ours are 10 to 15, depending on the tree line or any objects in the area. We even have some here because we have some areas that are high wind. We've put some on the ground here, and they're working fine. But there again, it depends on the wind speeds and where the wind's coming from. It kind of solves a lot of problems. Once it's up and running, you have the free energy. You don't have to worry about the thing coming down. A lot of the horizontals, unfortunately, collapse. They also don't run steady. As Derek mentioned before, they kind of chase the wind, and they have to redirect themselves. And when they redirect themselves, they're shut down for anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. So you're losing that time where the wind is at its strongest.
Right.
And then once it starts up again, maybe the wind changes course once again.
So they're terribly inefficient. They're terribly inefficient.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's correct. Where ours, depending almost within a 360-degree radius, you can pick up wind with ours. And we have what's called diffusers that kind of manage the air, if you will. So You could have a day where you don't see any wind. The trees, in fact, we have a video on our PowerPoint there where the trees aren't moving. The turbine's on top of a home. You can see no leaves moving at all, but the turbine's moving because the air, it's the diffusers are kind of moving the air into the turbine.
So let me ask Derek a question then. How little wind is required to generate power, electricity, with your innovative wind turbine design? How much wind do you need? Or how little
just
do you need?
Just under 3 miles an hour, it starts producing power.
Just under 3 miles per hour. And the typical wind turbine with the huge horizontal blades, how much wind do they require typically?
7 to 10, and it needs to be sustained. So they can't deal with microbursts or turbulence, where ours, the diffuser system, actually conditions the air and stabilizes turbulence and microbursts.
And this is unique. This design is unique. It's patented. There's nothing else like it in the world. Is that the idea?
Correct.
And when you say there are no moving parts, you mean like there's no motor to position the blades?
There's no external moving parts.
No external. Okay.
So the rotating mass is within the turbine, inside the diffuser system.
Right.
So basically, you know, by reducing the rotating mass, you're increasing efficiency because mass is energy. So if you have a tremendous amount of mass, you have to overcome that energy in order to produce anything.
Right.
So we just, you know, naturally with this design, we're able to reduce the inefficiencies of having that additional mass.
So rather than have these wind turbine farms, you're looking to sort of decentralize the power grid, and so each house would have its own wind turbine. You could put it right on top of the house. And how much would one of these generate? How much would one of your wind turbines, how much electricity would it produce?
Well, that's kind of the other unique situation with this. These turbines are also stackable. So, you know, in a good wind, very small, efficient home would only require one of our small single units, where, you know, if you have less wind and a larger home, then maybe you need two or three of the small turbines. And then we do have larger systems for community power and utility grade. But ultimately, our main focus is to help off-gridders and homeowners be much more independent. And in the future, we'd like to be a utility company and deploy our systems on a platform where we basically go to third world nations where they've never had power and be that utility company for them.
Right. And are these lightweight? I mean, how much would one of these units, so you say they're stackable. You could put one, does that mean one on top of the other? Or do you just mean that you could put more than one on your property?
No, you can put one on top of another.
Ah, okay. So how much do they weigh?
Very lightweight. Each turbine weighs about 50 to 100 kilograms.
Okay. And give me a sense, how much power, like if I had, let's say, a 1,500 square foot home and I've got my appliances and I've got, you know, I've got the lights on in the house and the stove, the electric range, maybe some computers and so forth. Is one unit enough to power that house?
And the variables you have to take into consideration are the actual consumption and the annual wind speed. So let's say you have a 5 meter per second wind speed and you consume around 800 to 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, then you might be able to get away with one small turbine. You'd be probably safer with two, but, you know, you'd be in that range. And then the other nice thing is you can pair this up with solar if you want to.
Right. Okay. So let's say I had two of these wind turbines. And how does this work? You come to the I order them from Cohelo. You actually install them. You connect them to the power supply in the house. How does it work?
Right. You can do it in a few different ways. You can either take your whole house off grid. You can take a portion of your house off grid. You can stay connected to the grid 100% and, you know, just backfeed and reduce your utility bill. But yeah, we don't have a distributor in Canada at the moment, but we are trying to get to that point.
All right. Well, we have 30 U.S. affiliates, so we have people listening in the U.S. as well. So in the meantime, while you're working on getting some Canadian distributors, we can talk about how people in the U.S., at least in the immediate future, could get off the grid using one of your devices. Now, how much would one of these wind turbines cost?
You know, depending on the package you're looking at, you're somewhere in the range from, you know, $15,000 to $30,000 for a small system that, you know, can take you off grid.
Wow. For the initial capital cost, that's a lot. But I mean, how people here in Ontario can relate.
The way I like to help people wrap their head around it is, how much money could you give to the utility company to get them to stop sending you a bill? And then, how much money could you give them to make it so they start sending you money in, let's say, 5 to 7 years?
So typically,
you know, then
it would pay for
it. Kind of makes more sense.
Right. So typically, if you bought one of these turbines, it would pay for itself in 5 to 7 years. Is that typical? Is that accurate?
Generally, when you take into account the incentives that come along with them, yes.
And
so basically, Richard, it's worth it for 10 years or less. But most people, it's going to be 5 to 7.
Right.
And then you have free energy after that.
Okay. And what is the life of one of these turbines? You mentioned it's made out of aluminum. So, I mean, how long will it last?
So we use aircraft aluminum, and then, you know, it has a coating on it. And really, because you only have two moving parts, your wear parts are only going to, you know, be very minimal. So basically you're looking at a 30 to 45 year lifespan.
Wow.
For the system.
35 to 40 years.
And then, you know, everything we utilize within the system is recyclable. So, you know, either you can rebuild it or you can completely recycle it.
You can rebuild it. Okay.
Correct.
Now,
the larger turbines are non-recyclable. They're mostly fiberglass, and I believe they last about 8 to 10 years.
Not ours. They last 20 years.
I'm talking about the bird killers, if you will, the horizontal ones. So ours are over 30 versus 10 years.
All right.
Well, 20.
And could you conceivably replace these wind turbine farms that we're using up here in Ontario? Could you replace them with enough of your turbines if you had enough of them?
Well, you definitely don't want to replace them because you don't want to take them down. But if you mean
forward instead of
a new approach,
exactly.
Yeah, it's similar to the cell phone. You know, the cell phones are so much more effective than the landline. And, you know, in 10 years, I'm not sure anyone's going to know what it was like to have a landline. You know, anyone that was born, you know, anytime near this, right. decade. So, you know, and the reason cell phones are gaining so much traction is because of the absolute utility of it. It's just so convenient and so effective. And why would you keep investing in a massive infrastructure for a centralized power system when you could do these very cost-effective microsystems and have not only true independence, but true security? Because it's extremely easy to take out one large centralized power system, but it's extremely hard to take out thousands of little microgrids.
Exactly. Derek and Tom, just hold on. We're heading into a break. We'll come back on the other side. Tom Orzeka, Derek Grassman, Cohelo Wind Turbines. How Wind Energy Saved My Life. Check out the TED Talk, and you can find that on my website. Go to strangeplanet.ca and then go to the radio page. And under tonight's show listing, right under Derek Grassman's name, you'll find the link there. Just click on that. Remarkable story of how this innovative hybrid vertical axis wind turbine came into being. I'm back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
Big Brother is listening, and so are you, to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Peering into the shadows, where the truth often hides. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Kohelo means gentle breeze in Hawaiian. And we are talking with two of the principals from Kohelo Wind Turbines. They're near Syracuse, New York. These are manufactured not in Syracuse. Is it Auburn or where did you say?
Kineapolis Falls, just west of Syracuse, about 20, 25 minutes.
Okay. And when you typically, again, when people think of a wind turbine, they think of these horizontal axis. So the blades are on the front. With a vertical axis, your design, the blades are spinning sort of upwards, right?
Yes. It's kind of almost like a whirlwind type situation, but they're housed inside that aluminum casing with the diffusers around it.
Right.
And I think Derek made a good example. You can consider the old the style that you were talking about in Canada is kind of like the brick phones, if you will.
Right.
Where our systems are like the new iPhone 7 or 8 coming out in the Galaxy 7S.
Right. Now I understand that you have made some inroads in Canada in Fredericton, New Brunswick. There's an energy, a renewable energy company there. Is it Neveco Power? They are utilizing one of your designs. This is my understanding.
Yeah, I think they bought a couple from us. We haven't heard from them recently, but yes, about a year or so ago, they did buy a couple units from us.
And they're testing them out.
Yes. But we are looking for distributors in Canada and as well as throughout the United States.
New Brunswick has set a target of 40% of its electricity from renewable sources by 2020. So perhaps, hopefully, your wind turbine design will be part of that. And what I'm understanding also is one of your units, if it produces... to power up one house. 6 kilowatt, a 6 kilowatt unit could power one home, possibly two, depending on the levels of consumption. one 6-kilowatt unit could power one, maybe two houses, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So two people could go in on this and split the cost, right?
Yes.
Two homes, all right.
Two homes similar to your size or less, yes.
All right. And then you have a larger unit that can generate a megawatt, and that could basically contribute back to the power grid. So you could actually make a little bit of money.
We can do up to 2 or 2.5 megawatts, yes.
All right. And then I understand you have even smaller units that could fit in your backpack. You could take it into the wilderness and power up a computer or something. Tell me about those.
We're still working on the lithium batteries for those, but yes, those are unique systems that, and what we basically need is to mass produce those. So we need a very large order, but we do have the prototype here if anybody would like to look at it. The other thing we have are streetlights. Most communities pay anywhere from $10,000 and up per streetlight, and then, of course, they have to pay the local utility company fee to keep those on,
right,
365 days a year.
Right.
So we can sell you the same type streetlight, same price, but you don't have to pay electric.
Because how is it powered? Are we talking about the same technology here? Is it tied into the wind
same
turbines?
Same technology, but on a smaller, much smaller scale. Yes.
So the streetlights are powered by the streetlights are powered by the wind.
Correct.
Remarkable. And is there any jurisdiction in the United States or in Canada that is utilizing that technology, that are using your street lamps?
We're working with a couple municipalities now, but we do not have them installed yet. But when we do, we'll make sure everyone knows.
Yeah, we'll definitely get it to Richard as soon as we have one up and running.
And how what size unit or how many of your wind turbines would be needed to say run a small factory?
It always depends, but we have a range of turbines from 3 kilowatt up to 2 megawatts, so we can fit just about any lifestyle you can think of.
And what
we're working on a Toyota facility close to us now, and hopefully we'll be taking several of their buildings off the grid.
You're prepared. You're almost ready where you can take a Toyota plant off the grid.
It's not a car plant. It's another manufacturing plant. But yes, we could
still
do that.
Off the grid. I mean, that's
correct.
Remarkable. That's remarkable. I mean, why is the world not beating a path to your door?
I think
they try to. I'm a little resistant, so
Has anyone tried to shut you? Has anyone perceived you as a threat? Well, we'll take a time out. We'll come back and we'll address this issue. But I mean, this is pretty disruptive, to say the least. Pretty disruptive technology, and we know what often happens in these circumstances. We'll come back and continue to chat with Tom Warzeka and Derek Grassman, Cohelo Wind Turbines, on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
PIN numbers, passcodes, social insurance numbers. If they make you wonder how private they are, here's two more numbers. 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Fasten your seatbelt and put your tray in the upright position. You're about to leave everything you know behind on The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Tom Warzeka, Derek Grassman from Cohelo Wind Turbines near Syracuse, New York. Give us the website, Tom.
You can reach me at twarzeka, W-A-R-Z-E-C-H-A, at cohelowind.com.
KohiloWind.com, and it's K-O-H-I-L-O Wind.com. K-O-H-I-L-O Wind.com. Derek Grassman here as well, and the tech talk is called How Wind Energy Saved My Life. So, again, just to repeat for those joining us, no need for these 200 to 300-foot wind turbines that we see now, for example, here in Ontario, that is causing so much consternation as they are basically shoved down the throats of many communities by the Liberal government here in Ontario. And they are dividing communities. Some people say that they cause things like tinnitus and tachycardia and nausea and sleep disruption and all of these different assortment of illnesses. Now, Health Canada says there's, according to their studies, there is no connection. However, tell that to the people who say they are suffering. But with the Kohilo wind turbine design, it's a vertical axis. And all the moving parts are housed inside this aluminum housing, so you don't have to worry about birds flying into the propellers or the actual turbines and so forth. I was asking you before the break about, you know, this is disruptive technology because people can very easily get off the grid. You can take a factory. You mentioned a Toyota factory ready to get off the grid. Have you been, shall I say, maybe encouraged to shut down? Has anyone come to you and said to you, you know, we can't have this. This is verboten.
I definitely had some serious challenges in the beginning because, people definitely recognize it as extremely disruptive. And, you know, here in New York, I took a stance that was against the grain on medical marijuana. So they used it against me, and I had been awarded almost $750,000 for a grant to help start the company. This was, you know, about 6-7 years ago. And right after that event, basically I was a target, and you know, I got in some trouble, and, you know, they tried to discredit me because, you know, the powers that be didn't want this to happen, and I just stayed strong and kept moving forward. But yeah, you can tell that there's definitely powers out there that try to stop it. You know, all I can say to other inventors is, if you have a strong vision, you really need to stick with it and apply yourself and, you know, just don't give up.
So
don't let them win.
How many, I don't know if you can answer this, but approximately how many homeowners have you helped to get off the grid to date?
Well, here in America, we've taken care of about 40. We've got 2 units on an island that power an entire island in the Philippines. We have another unit that powers a school in the Philippines, and then another luxury home in the Philippines. We were just awarded a contract to power everything north of the Amazon River in Brazil. So I know that there's a lot of guys down in Brazil right now that are working on the financing to get this up and running down in that region.
Wait a second. Let me repeat that. You have a contract to power everything north of the Amazon River in Brazil. I mean, what kind of how big a contract is that?
It's 3,800 2-megawatt units.
3,800 2-megawatt units.
Correct.
That's a sizable order. I mean, are you equipped now to handle that kind of an order?
Well, that's why we purchased the new factory. And we're tooling up to take care of that order.
How about elsewhere in the United States? You mentioned the Toyota factory. Are there some other examples?
Right now, we're not too aggressive in the U.S. at this moment, just because, you know, the power is pretty cheap and it's pretty reliable, though a lot of people don't think about it. We tend to put ourselves in areas where the need is greater, because I personally think that we need to be focused on the less privileged and, you know, helping them first,
right,
rather than
the
overprivileged.
So you mentioned Brazil.
We're working with a charity also, and a school in the Dominican Republic, a school and a church. I've also been trying to get into the country of Colombia. I had a big client, but the country of Germany came in and offered through a bank, a German bank, a free $500,000 energy survey. And of course, once they complete the survey, they're going to steer the clients. The survey will read that only the German products and not ours.
Right.
So you run into things like that also.
But the idea here is that you can bring cheap, renewable energy to places that simply do not have access to things like coal or nuclear or hydroelectric power. I mean, this is one of the things I've always said, that what a continent like Africa needs is an industrial revolution. They didn't get one. So they need to get their hands. I mean, that's the way we're gonna raise these people up out of abject poverty, not just in Africa, but anywhere. They need an industrial revolution. We in the West, they need access to cheap energy, and you have the answer.
Well, we have one of the answers. There's some good solar products out there too that we also distribute. So those are two clear answers. You know, you look at what Venezuela did. One of the good things Venezuela did under the Chavez regime, he gave a lot of cheap diesel and gasoline to all the Caribbean islands. And in return, they ran their power with generators using those cheap products. Well, now Venezuela is going down the tubes quickly with the current president, and those islands are going to be devastated because they're not going to have any power. In fact, they're being hurt badly right now. So we hope to help countries like that. And, you know, I've been waiting for the new ambassadors, if you will, to be appointed. And I hope to work through the Department of Commerce assisting those countries.
How does the wind turbine work in conjunction with the solar panels? You produce those as well, correct?
No, we don't produce those. But
okay.
We have a company here in the U.S. that makes state-of-the-art solar, not using the polycrystals. But I'm going to have Derek take over, and he can explain how to integrate both the solar and the wind.
Yeah, so the solar that we offer is from Styon, and it's a very unique process. It's a lot like the thin film, only now it's a more refined solid solar panel, and it's very elegant, just simply a black sheet of glass. It basically, through its own charge controller, joins our system in powering the inverter system or the battery system, whichever way you go with your options. And it's a very simple plug-and-play addition.
All right. So, again, for our Canadian listeners, you don't have a distributor yet up here, but could people direct order it from you?
Oh, absolutely.
Certainly.
But they would have to install it themselves? Or, I mean, is it difficult to install one of these units?
No, it's not difficult. You'd probably just want a basic electrician if you're connecting to the grid. If not, then I would say, just read the manuals, and you could either do it yourself or have a general contractor help you.
So
we
even,
can assist.
Yeah.
We
Go
we
ahead.
Can assist with either on the phone
tech support
type thing.
And so again, just repeat for those people joining us, an average house, 1,500 square feet, 2,000 square feet, was it a 6 kilowatt unit that would do?
Yeah, we would recommend the kilowatt unit.
The 6 kilowatt unit, and the price point on that again was?
Depending on your options, you know, 15 to 30,000, maybe a little more. You know, when you schedule in the install, it's obviously going to be a little more.
Right, and but again, depending on your consumption, 1 6-kilowatt unit could power 2 houses.
Correct.
Correct. Yes.
So you and your neighbor go in on this unit, and you could be off the grid almost. Again, depending on consumption.
Yeah, and that brings down your payback period. So maybe instead of 5 to 7 years, it's down to 3 to 4 now.
All right. So give people the website again, and is there an 800 number?
You can, if you would right now, Richard, if you'd be so kind, give the number that I've given you, which is 315-422-0769. And then if you could also put up my email, and I'll get back to folks, especially if folks want to get into distribution, if they have a distribution network, either in their state or their province, we'd be happy to sit down and talk with them.
All right. Just one more time. Give us the phone number, Tom, and your email.
315-422-0769. The email would be T. Warzeka, W-A-R, Z as in zebra, E, C as in car, H-A, at Kohilo, K-O-H-I-L-O, wind.com.
All right, Tom and Derek, thank you so much for this. This is pretty exciting, to say the least. I appreciate
thank
your time
you
tonight.
Much. No, we appreciate your time, and we love your show. And I invited you before, and I'm giving you an open invitation again on the air to come down and see us anytime.
I will do my darndest to get down there and check it out. Kohilo Wind Turbines. Tom Orzeka and Derek Grassman. Open lines on the other side. Open lines and our remote viewing experiment. What's in the box? Use the hashtag TCS Remote. TCS Remote. StrangePlanet.ca, the website. Follow me on Twitter, at Richard Serrett. As always, follow the truth.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate in your cabin in the woods. A special hello to all of you listening in on our flagship station, Zoomer Radio, AM 740, 96.7 FM, here in the Liberty Village neighborhood of Toronto. And those of you, of course, checking us out on one of our affiliate stations, the podcast at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn.com, and TalkZone.com. The fabulous apps, of course, the Zoomer Radio app and the Conspiracy Show app, both free downloads. And the live stream. Let's not forget all of you checking us out on the YouTube live stream, or if you check us out later on the archived version, welcome to you as well. However and wherever you're listening, I do bid thee the finest and the warmest of welcomes, and I thank you for your fine company. Open lines for the entire hour. Open lines. Get on board now before the lines fill up. And we can talk about just about anything. If you've heard something recently on the program you'd like to discuss, you have ideas for a future program, if you've had a UFO sighting, an encounter with some cryptid, you want to talk conspiracy, we're good for that as well. And let me give you the numbers. In the Greater Toronto Area, 416-360-0740. Again, in the Greater Toronto Area, 416-360-0740, and toll free from just about anywhere, 866-740-4740, 866-740-4740. We are going to get to our remote viewing experiment, our weekly remote viewing experiment, in just a moment. So if you're out there listening, watching on the YouTube, however, Let me direct your attention. This is important. I have to direct your attention to my desk here. Here on 70 Jefferson Avenue in Liberty Village in Toronto. And on the desk to my right is an object. I want you to hone in on that object. Albert Vinzel, our occasional remote viewer, has his eyes closed. He's focusing. Ian in the other room is focusing. Ryan White, our fine intern, focusing. You at home, focusing on this object here on my desk in the studio at 70 Jefferson Zoomerplex, Liberty Village, Toronto. And if you'd like to guess, not guess, if you'd like to remote view this object and offer your suggestion, use the hashtag TCS remote. T as in the, C as in conspiracy, S as in show. Hashtag TCS remote. And for whoever comes the closest, we'll offer up a fine piece of conspiracy show merchandise. We have phone cases and T-shirts and hoodies and mugs and so forth. All right. I also want to mention what we have coming up on the program next week. J. Pat Brown will be with us from muckrock.com. Muckrock is, I guess you could call them sort of citizen journalists, and these are the folks that file all of these FOIA requests. I mean, thousands of them. You will recall several weeks ago we were discussing how the CIA had dumped something like, what was it, Albert, 13 million pages of documents. They made them available online, finally. And these documents went back to sort of the height of the Cold War, back even further into the 1950s. They dealt with remote viewing programs. They dealt with UFO sightings and so forth. And they were released online thanks largely to the efforts of Muckrock. And they essentially sort of embarrassed the CIA and sort of forced their hand into releasing these documents. So we'll talk with J. Pat Brown from muckrock.com. All right, the gang is all here, as I mentioned. Ian Robertson on the other side of the glass, twisting the knobs and dials. Albert Vinzel, my story producer and occasional remote viewer. And Ryan. All right, let's go around the horn before we go to the phone lines. And Albert, hang on, let me get the microphones working here. What do you remote view here? What do you see?
A toy windmill.
A toy windmill?
That's being front-loaded from the interview.
Yes.
But I see the color red. I think there would be red paint on it.
All right.
And somehow I get like ice and salt. I don't know if it means anything, but maybe like a children's art project. But the color I see the strongest is red. Maybe this is the week where it's like a red Valentine or a red ball or the heart.
All right. And Ian?
I know you're not supposed to just call it out. You're supposed to describe it in some way, but I'm seeing something to do with golf.
Something to do with golf?
I don't know. Golf ball, golf pin.
All right. And Ryan?
It's interesting. Albert said something to do with a windmill, right? I kind of saw like a little hook, I want to say like a little fishing hook, but, you know, maybe size of I don't know, a little bit, the palm of your hand or so.
A fishing hook.
Some sort of hook.
Do you have a color, anything, a texture?
I saw metallic, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So again, just to recap, Albert says something red. It could be a children's art project, maybe something Valentine related. Ian, a golf tee what was the other one?
Literally a golf ball.
A golf ball or a golf tee. And Ryan, a metallic object, maybe a hook, a large fish hook, the size of the palm of your hand. All right. So again, the hashtag to use is TCS remote. TCS remote. And we'll do the reveal probably around the bottom of the hour. All right. Why don't we go to the phones? And let's see. Who do we have up first? Ren is in Somerset, Pennsylvania. Ren, good evening, good morning. How are you?
Oh, okay. And how about yourself, sir?
Terrific, thank you.
I just wanted to, fellow you just had on about the wind turbine, it just sounds so familiar, and maybe it's a different design, but James McCanney has one that sounds similar to this, but maybe I'm sure it's slightly different at least, and he's opening up a prototype in South America somewhere, I believe, that's supposed to be going online real soon. It's and he can gear his up to just about any size with the new metals and technology to power cities and basically replace nuclear or anything else for that matter.
Now, James McCanney, as in Planet X, James McCanney?
Well, he's not Planet X. he claims that people are taking his voice and splicing it and making it sound. He doesn't believe in Planet X at all.
Ah, okay. All right. But I have heard him speak to the issue. But we're talking about the same James McCanney. Just wanted to make sure. All right. Well, it's possible, you know, that there are similar designs to Kohelo. Maybe want to get on up to their website, kohelowind.com, and see if that one looks familiar, if it's similar to the one, the same design that James McCanney has. And these are, again, this is a vertical axis as opposed to the horizontal blades that we're used to seeing with these 200, 300-foot wind turbines. All right, Ren, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right. Dave is in Michigan. Hey, Dave. Good evening. Good morning. Welcome to the Conspiracy Show. How are you?
Fine. Just cruising home from work, and I heard you had open line, and I've been wanting to talk about the whole everybody saying that the spacewalk was a fake and stuff on the moon. If that would have been true, the Russians would have called us out on it.
Yeah, that's one of my my questions. Why they didn't do that?
Yeah, they had the same tracking stuff as we got.
Understood. Yeah. First of all, Dave, where in Michigan are you calling from?
I don't really want to say.
That's fine. No, are you up in the peninsula or?
No, sir. No, okay. I'm in the lower. I listen to you on 740, but she
Excellent.
Comes in kind of sketchy every Sunday night when I'm driving home.
All right.
Well, I listen to you every Sunday, that I have to work.
I appreciate it. Well, yeah, you mentioned we did a recent show. We had the publisher or the distributor of Nexus Magazine, and he was presenting his photographic evidence as a one-time professional photographer, for those who didn't hear the show. And he maintained that it was not possible for those astronauts using the Hasselblad camera to operate it with all of that, the spacesuit, basically. The other argument that he offered up was that the film would have been fogged by the radiation. Although, you know, for each of these things, there is an explanation.
Right.
The film stored in these metal cases could have been shielded from the radiation. As I've mentioned, I believe we went to the moon, Dave. I believe, but I'm willing to hear these arguments because I think they're fascinating.
Well, our boys at NASA are pretty darn smart. I mean, they know what they're doing, although the pencil and the pen was a little different. But anyway, they kind of know what they're doing. And like I said, the Russians would have called us on the carpet in a heartbeat.
Well,
yeah, so
one would assume. But then the other question is, and this is one I can't answer, and that is, well, then why haven't we been back?
Well, I think it's just the cost for what we gain for going to the moon itself is pretty astronomical. And, of course, there's the other thing that maybe somebody up there said, stop it.
Ah, yes, yes.
You know,
we were warned off the moon. That's right.
That's right. You know, I don't know. Could be. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth.
I appreciate your 2 cents, Dave. Anytime. Please call again.
Hey, keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you.
You're fun to listen to.
I appreciate you checking in with us, Dave. Thank you. All right. Anne is in Aurora, wants to talk about wind turbines. Hello, Anne. Good evening.
Good evening. Great to talk to you. I have listened to you for so many years. I just love your show.
Thank you.
Anyway, yes, I was really interested in the wind turbine stuff. Can you just give me their email address again? T-W-A-R.
Well, first of all, if you go to here, let me give you the website.
Okay.
It's Kohelo.
Yeah.
And that's spelled K-O-H-I-L-O. It's a
Hawaiian.
Yes, one L. It's a Hawaiian name. It means gentle breeze. KoheloWind.com.
Okay.
KoheloWind.com. And The email, I guess, I believe is it's Tom Warzeka, T-O-M, Tom Warzeka, W-A-R, Z, E-C-H, at CoheloWind.com. Did I get that right, Albert? Yes.
So T-W-A-R-Z-E-C-H?
A.
A. At Coheilo Winds Turbine.
No, CoheiloWind.com.
CoheiloWinds.com.
Yeah.
All right. I was just wondering about investing in this new venture. Do you know anything about that?
Well, no, I don't. You'd have to...
You'd have to talk
to them directly. I know they said that they are looking for distributors up here in Canada.
Uh-huh. I hate those turbines. Massive turbines. I just hate them.
Do you have a wind farm near you?
No, I don't. But my grandson builds them.
Oh, he does? The big 200, 300-foot towers.
Oh, my God. He's right up there, and the size of those blades. Anyway, I just would love to see them gone totally. One other thing. Many, many years ago, you started talking about water fluoridation.
Oh, let me get you to hold on, Ann, because that's a whole other discussion. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Okay, Ann and Aurora will stay with us. Back with more Open Lines here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
Providing the evidence and letting you draw your own conclusions. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The owners of the system are asleep. Now we can play. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
All right, welcome back to our open line segment for the hour. Again, the phone number is 416-360-0740, 416-360-0740, and toll free from just about anywhere, 866-740-4740. We'll get back to, is it Anne in Aurora, in just a moment. She wants to talk about fluoride in the water. I just wanted to get to some tweets here. People using the hashtag for our remote viewing experiment, TCS Remote. And let's see, Mike R. sees the color red, maybe a red ink pen or red pencil. Ed Krez, just like you, Ian, he sees a golf ball. He actually went so far as to name the brand, a Titleist, he says. Ross Moore, a rubber ducky. And the Big Bop. Big Bop says a pen as well. And let me see, we have some other ones here, I think. This one's interesting. Someone here, where is it? I've lost the name, but they're guessing a piece of cutlery. A piece of cutlery. All right, we'll do the reveal at the bottom of the hour. Just a reminder as well, this is our open line segment, but I am going to do an AMA, an Ask Me Anything, and I'm going to post it to YouTube tomorrow. You've been sending me in your questions, and I will address those. I'll get to those tomorrow, Monday, and I will post the response to your questions on YouTube, at the YouTube channel, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. And I'm just trying to see, what is the hashtag? If you want to send in a question tonight or tomorrow morning early before I get to it, it's hashtag AMA Richard Sarrett. AMA Richard Sarrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. All right, Anne, you wanted to talk about fluoride.
Yes, many, many years ago, you talked about water fluoridation, and I'm sure you're totally against it, and it really got me going. And I've been involved with it ever since, trying to get it out. Have you any idea when that was, and can I go back in there and see, listen to that program again?
Well, I've done radio programs, and I've also done a television program about it. I believe season 3, if I'm not mistaken, for the TV show, maybe season 4. And that should be on Vision TV. They air the old episodes in pretty high rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you when it's going to air next, but if you go to the Vision TV website, then you should find it there. You may even be able to view it online. And if you go to my website, strangeplanet.ca,
yeah,
and then if you go to the radio page for this, for the conspiracy show, there's a search engine there. Just type in fluoride.
Oh, okay.
And those old shows will pop up. And then make sure you register as a member, and you can listen to them.
Oh, okay.
All right?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Anne. Thank you.
I wish you would do another one on fluoride.
Your wish is my command, Anne.
Thank you very
much. We will
much.
Do another one.
Absolutely. Before, thanks so much.
All right. Before the summer is before the summer arrives, we will do another show on fluoride. Do you hear that Albert?
That would be amazing.
All right.
Thank you.
Albert, on your bike. Get busy with that one. Thank you. All right. Our good friend Nelson Thal checking in. Hey, Nelson.
Hi there, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
Terrific, thanks, and congratulations on you breaking ground with the show week by week.
Brick by brick.
Brick by brick.
Thank you, yes.
Listen, I wanted to say that, you know, it's really exciting where we started from, exposing the cover-ups in the 80s, the 90s, and the O's, and eventually we went on Blowtorch CFRB Live Drive, and did the TWA 800. They said that at that time, if you recall, the top guys at CFRB said this was their finest hour when we brought Pierre Salinger on for the live drive to expose the TWA cover-up.
Former press secretary for John F. Kennedy, and then a longtime foreign I believe he was sort of the Paris-based correspondent for ABC News. And you're right, he was one of the lone... He was a lone wolf crying in the wilderness, the lone voice crying in the wilderness, insisting that it was, in fact, a bomb that brought down a TWA 800. And that one, you know, I'm still not convinced that case is closed. I mean,
well, the good news is that the good guys have gotten control of the executive branch and removed the power grabbers.
Well, you know, this whole... business about fake news is very interesting, and the total erosion of confidence in the mainstream media, and depending on, you know, which side of the fence you're on, you either say they're the purveyors of the fake news, or those on the other side of the fence, of course, point their finger at the so-called alternative media and say they're the fake news.
Well, the globalists bought into the media of the value adders, the patriots, and took control of their media and started to try and brainwash them and distort the truth, but they've gotten caught at it. I mean, the value adders have now trumped the power grabbers.
The value adders, what do you mean?
Because they're leaving. The executive branch, the bad guys had control of the executive branch, and they've been kicked out now, and they're even control of government is starting to slip, and they're running to Canada. That's why they're coming in here, and they're coming across in the snow.
Well, one of the interesting things that has come out of the latest presidential cycle, and you and I have talked about this off the air, is that the whole, you know, the raison d'etre for programs like this, or at least part of, I shouldn't say the whole raison d'etre, we talk a lot about a lot of things, but we certainly have talked over the years about the forces of globalism, you know, the one world order or the new world order versus those that believe in the nation state. And now that has become part of, thanks to the last presidential election, that has become part of the conversation. It has become sort of the ground. It's become eye level. Now everyone's talking about globalists versus the nationalists or globalists versus the nation state. And
which was a discussion which the ruling, the media had kept that out of their consciousness.
Right. And so now people are the world over are starting to question the value of a lot of these international institutions like the United Nations, like the World Trade Organization, like the Eurozone or the European Union and so forth. And so I guess my only reservation is programs like mine may become increasingly mainstream, dare I say.
Well, we've got our man in things that we used to say that they told us back in the 70s that we were crazy. Now we've got a guy in the White House who's agreeing with us, who can see what's going on backstage in the global theater, and he's a Patrick Henry, he's a Paul Revere. I mean, he's all those and more rolled up in one.
I hear more and more pundits calling him maybe another Teddy Roosevelt. What do you make of that?
It's hard to compare him. Yeah, I understand that. I think it's going to be hard to compare him to anybody from the past. He's sort of a collage of a lot of things. But certainly, just from the standpoint of the old battle that's been going on, just going back to what's been hanging, forget the recent times, something that's been hanging there in the background. They've been fighting this war. Remember, Lafayette, Cornwallis surrendered to Lafayette, but he did not surrender to General Washington, which is why in the post offices, all the paintings of him are usually unfinished. There's the famous unfinished picture of George Washington. They had it in all the post offices, so it was right under their nose. Nobody asked, well, why is it unfinished? It's unfinished because Cornwallis didn't surrender to Washington. So the battle continued. You know, in 1812, they fought in Toronto. The British went down and burned down the White House. Then in 1861, the British and the Patriots fought again. I mean, this is an ongoing ancient quarrel. It's there, and to brush it aside and not to see it for what it is just to not learn from history.
All right, Nelson.
Yeah.
Poignant as always. I appreciate it.
So next time, let's talk about the art of the deal. And the 7-year peace pact is ground, and the art of the deal is figure.
All right. It's a All deal. Right. It's a deal.
It's a deal.
Art of the deal. Nelson Thal. Thank you. Let's see. Andrew is checking in from New York. No, that's not Andrew. Okay, let's go to Ed in Las Vegas? Hey, Ed. Good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Welcome to the Conspiracy Show.
Richard,
I'm wearing too many hats. Thanks, Ed.
I know. Great show as always. I've been listening to you for about a year and a half or so. I try to always catch you on YouTube if possible. So,
and how are you listening live? How are you listening to us live in Las Vegas?
Through YouTube.
Great. Oh, you're on the you're joining us on the stream. All right. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Waving to the camera
there.
Stream,
I listen to your app. Your app is good too, but I kind of like YouTube because I can watch it also.
Great. All right.
Gosh, do you know, there's so many interesting areas of conspiracy and stuff, and I've, kind of tried to narrow things down a little bit. I kind of have a good interest in this, and I know you're kind of into time travel, I think. I've heard you say before, or kind of an interest in it.
I love time travel. One of my favorite subjects.
This isn't quite time travel, but I'm kind of interested, like, in parallel dimensions or the multiverse.
Right, right.
What are your thoughts on that? I don't really have any experience with that, but the concept interests me a lot.
Wow, the multiverse. The idea of a parallel universe, that one, quite honestly, is difficult for me to wrap my head around. But theoretical physicists, some of them will say, well, it's quite likely.
Right.
It's quite possible. I'm trying to remember the gentleman from Oxford University who believes that one day he will be able to prove the existence of the multiverse or parallel universes using quantum computing.
Huh.
And I should look that up and maybe we can get him on the program.
Right.
But, theoretical physicists talk about the existence of at least 11, maybe 12, I think they may be up to now, 12 dimensions.
Yeah, I think I've even read somewhere like up to even like 26. Isn't
right.
It, what, 3 or 4 if you count time or something like that?
Sure. So, I mean, I have no – and this is why, I take some flack for saying that I believe in an unseen world, but that's not really out of the ordinary.
Right.
I mean, theoretical physicists have said as much. Now,
sure.
The question is, are these other 12 or 26 dimensions, are they inhabited? I happen to believe that they are. And I liken it to a koi pond. When you're looking down on a koi pond, now I know koi pond or koi can goldfish can look up and see you, but imagine that they can't, and they can only see sort of in two dimensions. They can look left and they can look right and so forth, but they can't perceive a world above the surface of the water. And then all of a sudden, we stick a finger down into the water, we break the surface of the water. That must seem to them to be some sort of you know, supernatural paranormal event.
Yeah, I like that. I like that vision. That's good.
And so that, to me, is how the these other dimensions work. I mean, they're right. Literally right in front of our nose, but we cannot. We're not equipped. Our senses are not equipped to perceive them. And so I think many or most supernatural paranormal events can be explained with these other dimensions, these hyper dimensions, if you will.
Also, one other thing, Richard. I have an idea for a possible future show for you.
Lay it on me, Ed.
It's kind of more on a lighter maybe aspect, possibly. How about maybe some type of treasure type things? I know there's that Lost Dutchman's mine in Arizona and like Victoria Peak. I think it's in New Mexico.
Right.
Or just something along those lines. Just kind of a lighter kind of topic, but I think it might have some interest.
Would love to. You know what? It's we darn well we need it. something
exactly.
Lighter after what we've been through. And we'll get on that. Maybe we'll revisit Oak Island. Thank you, Ed, in Las Vegas. Appreciate it. Back with more of your calls here on The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett.
Take a look around. What do you really see? This is where you can tell all about it. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. In a democracy, we elect officials so we can sleep at night. So why are you up? 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
All right, welcome back. We are in the midst of our open lines here on The Conspiracy Show. And just a reminder, if you do have a question and you don't get on, I am doing an AMA tomorrow, and I will post it to YouTube, the YouTube channel, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Just use the hashtag AMA Richard Serrett, AMA as in Ask Me Anything. We're going to do the reveal now for our little remote viewing experiment that we do just about every week. And let me see here. Blah Blah Tuesday says black and white with numbers, also square. Merlin Wild says a phone. Rick Knight guesses a pair of socks. And Carlsberg, a piece of cutlery. So here we go. Here is the remote. Carlsberg, you nailed it. Look at that. Look at that. Albert, call Russell Targ at the Stanford Research Institute, and we have a remote viewer for him. Carlsberg, we will reach out to you, and we will send you some lovely Conspiracy Show merchandise. Incidentally, please take a moment, get up to the website, theconspiracyshow.com, and check out the online store. Just go into the menu and check out the store, and then you can see all of the merch. All right. Someone on our YouTube, on the live chat streaming us on YouTube, Donnie Fan One. I just want to get to this because those of you who listen to the program know that our bumper music, we use a lot of Danny Elfman on the program. I love Danny Elfman, and I just find his music very etheric and just suitable to the program. And Danny or Donnie Fan One wanted to know whether I've ever interviewed Danny Elfman, whether I've had him on the program. If not, why not? Well, no, the answer is no, I have not. That's a great idea. Maybe we should try. Shall we try for Danny Elfman? That would be a huge undertaking. However, I think be very interesting. I'd love to crawl inside his mind. I tell you. Thanks for the suggestion, Danny Fan One. We'll try and get Danny Elfman. But, you know, that's a big get. Can't promise that one. All right. Andrew is in New York. Andrew, welcome. Good evening. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Richard. I love your show.
Thank you. Whereabouts in New York are you?
I'm out on the island.
Long Island. All right.
You got it.
Wonderful.
So anyway, just getting over the snow. I mean, it, finally the last of it's melted away. Except
yeah,
piled
you,
up
you got hammered, didn't you?
Yeah, unbelievable. We got through the whole winter, and then all of a sudden that came out of nowhere. But March is still ahead of us, you know what they say.
Yes,
so we shall see. But I get a feeling because the heat you feel when the sun arcs across the sky, you know, through the windows.
Right.
I think winter's definitely on the way out, fighting a losing battle.
I hope so.
I don't want to jinx it, though. Anyway, I called because I was listening last week when, I guess it was last week, when you had the guy on who was talking about the photography.
A couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, on the moon stuff.
Right.
Every time they bring it up, I never hear anything that I heard like a number of years ago. I'm old, so I don't know. It could have been 10, 15 years ago. But I was sitting around with a bunch of people, and we were talking about, did we go to the moon, you know?
Right.
And one of the guys brought up, just out of a clear blue sky, he said, no, he said, I saw a program on TV where they said there were shadows, there were different shadows, that means there was lighting outside and everything like that. And a guy who was sitting there, who was a quiet kind of guy at the time, he's kind of a techno-nerd kind of guy, he said to me, he said, no, he said, we did go to the moon, but those pictures that you saw weren't real. And, of course, the guy said, what do you mean they weren't real? He said they couldn't show any of the pictures on the moon. I said, how do you know this? What are you talking about? And he claimed that he had an uncle or somebody who worked at the photo lab that processes the stuff, you know?
Right.
It wasn't NASA. It was somebody within the one of the branches of the service
okay. That
processed the thing. And he said, you'll never see the real photos because there was no way they could take photographs on the moon without the ruins being showed.
Ah.
And I said, the ruins being showed? What's that? He said, there are ruins everywhere. That's why they went to that particular place. And I just kind of kept it like in the back of my mind as loose talk. But over the years, as I was thinking about it, I said, you know something? If they did go to the moon and there were ruins there and they found stuff, let's face it, we probably have some sort of anti-grav ships of some kind. And I don't think Homo sapiens came up with the anti-grav technology. It was all back-engineered stuff, you know,
right,
from stuff,
right.
The stuff that we found. I mean, you know, you talk about the Nazi Bell back during the Second World War, and they're talking about superheating metals and spinning them around at a terrific speed.
Mm-hmm.
You think a human being would come up with an idea, let's take some metals, melt them down to a liquid, heat them up to superheat, and then spin them around a thing and see what we... They're not going to do something like that unless they got the idea from something else and then worked on it. So I think if there are ruins up there, and if they went up to the moon and they brought something back, and it warranted further exploration, I could see 7 or 8 trips to the moon, and beyond that, it would have to go black. Because if you keep on going to the moon all the time, and there's only so many rocks and minerals that you
right.
can show the general public, people are going to start asking, why are you going to the moon? What are you doing up on the moon all
Excellent
the time?
Points. All, Andrew, got to run. We have a
now,
break.
Now, one quick thing.
Okay, hold on. I'll get to you. I'll get to you after the break. Hold on. I promise. Andrew stays with us. More of your calls here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Poking holes in the darkness. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. To see the light, call Richard now at 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. Andrew stays with us from the island, New York, and you were talking about the moon landing and made some excellent points. This is something, you know, I think we've heard before that the Apollo astronauts discovered, or they knew about them in advance, and they went to one specific area on the moon because they wanted to check out these ancient artifacts on the moon or ancient structures, and that perhaps these were A, airbrushed out of the pictures taken on the moon, or the pictures were produced elsewhere, maybe on a sound stage. We went to the moon, but we couldn't obviously take those pictures on the moon because it would have shown these structures, they were everywhere. And, Andrew, you had another point you wanted to get to.
Yeah, the other thing that has I don't really know. The jury's still out, as they say, on that whole thing. But, you know, I often wonder this. Richard, you know, you've had a telescope ever since you were a little kid. You've had you get a telescope when you're young, and you look
right.
at bigger telescopes as you get older. Where have you ever on this planet seen a telescope that didn't have a secondary lens to adjust the focus in it? They all have things to adjust the focus in
right,
it.
Right, right.
So I often wonder myself, you know, why, when there was doubt about us going to the moon, it'd be a simple matter just to take, what's that telescope that orbits the Earth?
The Hubble. Yeah.
Like, take the Hubble that takes these pictures of galaxies that are, you know, tens of thousands of light years away, and just aim it at the moon.
Right.
Put the thing all the highest resolution, so it would be like you could see, like, little areas on the moon, and just go to the landing site where the thing is and show people.
Well, I believe that...
That's what they say. They can't focus on it. It's too close. That's what they say. But I said, is it too close, or is it that they don't want to focus on it because they don't want people to see what's up there?
Right, right. Well, you know, I think we're going to find out soon enough when they send an unmanned probe up there. I believe that we landed on the moon.
I do too. I agree with the last caller, because if we didn't go to the moon, Russia had Sputnik up before we had Explorer up, and their technology is on a par with ours. And they would have ratted us out. They would have known. They would have been able to see that nothing left Earth orbit and went towards them. It would have been 9 ways till Sunday. People would have been saying it's a big hoax.
Right. And the big issue with a lot of debunkers is that the Van Allen belts would prevent us. But there's a way to get around those Van Allen belts. The Van Allen belts are most prevalent at the poles, and they kind of thin out like around the equator. So you can do sort of an end run around those Van Allen belts, and you can travel. There's thicker parts and there are thinner parts. So they understood this, and they sent the rockets through the thinner parts, so to minimize exposure. So the Van Allen belts is not a deal killer for me by any stretch.
Richard, I'll let you go, but you know Moore's law, right?
Yes.
Every 5 years, something.
That's right.
3 years, the availability of all knowledge doubles.
Right.
Okay. Let's just say that we had the technology back in the 40s or the 50s. To make anti-grav shifts.
Right.
You know?
Right.
If you look up something called a flux liner.
Okay.
FLUXLINER. Just Google it.
Okay.
And look at some of the stuff that's on there. And look at the shape of some of these early diagrams. You know, saucers, you know, UFOs nowadays are the triangular ones. Before that, going back to like 60s, early 50s, they were little dots of light, like the famous pictures of them going in formation by the water tower there.
Right.
You've seen that, okay?
Sure.
If you look at the real early ones, the stuff like the writer George Adamski, you know who he is?
Right, yes, of course.
Okay. Like inside the spaceships and stuff. They look like a dinner plate, like a regular dinner plate.
Sure.
Sitting on a table, ready to have food on it. And you know what a pie plate is that you cook a pie with?
Yes.
Well, imagine a deep dish pie plate, like a deep dish one, and you turn it upside down, you put it on top of the dinner plate.
Right.
Remember the flying saucers that you saw like that in daytime shots?
Yeah.
And they look like, that looks fake, they probably made that up. That doesn't look like anything that's, you know, streamlined or aerodynamic. It just didn't look like it would do anything. These diagrams of this thing called a flux liner are exactly like that. And I said, that was 1957.
Mm-hmm.
What if... That wasn't visitors from outer space. That was a flux liner that we had. Can you imagine if we had anti-grav technology in 1957, where would we be at now?
Exactly.
70 years later.
Exactly. Well, you know, back
coupled
in
with Moore's law. Just think about that.
Well, you're right on the mark, I think, because back in the late 50s, Boeing was it was public. It was public knowledge that Boeing was experimenting with anti-gravitics. And then
Boeing or Lockheed Martin?
I believe it was Boeing. And then all of a sudden there was this news blackout and nothing.
It just went dark,
nothing.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Off the radar. Andrew, thank you. I hope you'll call again.
Food for thought. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's a virtual buffet, food for thought. All right, Michael is in Toronto. Michael, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. How are you?
Hey, Richard. Just wanted to see that.
Your phone line is a little shaky. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, I'm on a cell phone.
Are you on hands-free?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's try it again.
Is this better?
A little bit. Just, get your question out quick, and I'll try to answer it as best I can.
Okay. I'll just hang up after I have this. Raise these two things with you and see what you have to say. The first one is, have you heard of a book called The Alien Chronicles by Matthew Hurley? And what do you think of those paintings in this book?
The Alien Chronicles by Matthew Hurley?
Yeah.
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, okay. Something maybe you can check out.
Is it a recent book?
Sorry?
Is it a recent book, Michael?
Yeah, I think it's quite recent. It's
okay.
Very short, but it's got a collection of amazing pieces and UFOs and stuff in it. It's done by classical artists, you know.
I understand. So, yeah, in other words, yeah. Renaissance paintings from the Renaissance
that seem to
show a depiction of I'm familiar with a lot of those paintings. So this book actually is a collection of all these paintings.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this might be he'd be a good guy to have on the program then. Maybe we should look into that. All right, Michael.
And the other thing I just wanted to bring up was what do you think about Genesis 6:1 where they talked about.
Michael, again, I didn't hear that one. You cut off.
Genesis 6:1. Yeah.
Chapter 6, verse 1.
Yeah, sons of God. How come there's no mention of daughters of God? You ever wonder about that? And that's about it. So hang up. You know?
Why not daughters of God? Well,
yeah, bye.
Sure. Gender politics when it comes to the Bible, I don't know. I know. God is, I don't call me a dinosaur, but God is he in my books. But he's neither he nor she, right? God is beyond gender. Let's say hello to Mel in Toronto. Mel, welcome. Good evening. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi, Mel. Hi, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Richard. Good evening.
Good evening.
I wanted to tell you something. Remember the Mr. Zachariah Sitchin, who wrote The Journey to the Mythical Past, about the little elephant and anything of Olmec that resembled anything to do with Africa that the museums and archaeologists were hiding?
Did you say Zachariah Sitchin?
That's right.
He wrote a book about, I mean, I'm familiar with his
The Journey to the Mythical Past.
Okay, I haven't read that one.
No, in chapter 5 he
All
wrote
right.
this. And on a plate of photo plate number 20. There's a toy elephant and other toys related to African culture, right?
Okay.
And so they hid this, right?
Who hid it?
Museums.
Why would they hide a picture of an elephant?
The only thing, you see, this is it. The only thing they couldn't hide was the 24 tons of those, you know, those African-looking heads, which are in the open. But they try to claim, you know, all kinds of baloney, right?
Okay, I'm not quite following you. Like you're saying the museums were hiding?
Yeah, they used to be in the open, you know, like little elephants, little carvings from the stone and toys.
But why would they try and hide that? I don't understand.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
That's what he wrote about the missing elephant.
Okay.
You know, and the astronauts, right?
The
chapter 5. And he has the photo of it. Well, so we couldn't, you know, nobody has access to actually seeing it. The public cannot. Well, my surprise was last year my daughter was in Chichen Itza.
Right.
Visiting the ruins, right? And she sent me a whole bunch of photographs, right? And you know how I am diligent at looking at everything unusual.
Right.
One of those ruins, right on the top to the left of it, there's a carving of an elephant in profile.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah, why would we find a picture of an elephant in Chichen Itza?
That's right.
Right. Another a continent away from Africa or Asia.
And they couldn't hide this. I think, you know, but I am astonished. People go there in millions, right? Tourists. How do they miss it?
What is the implication here, Mel?
They deny that the Africans, the Olmecs, right? What we know as
Olmecs,
were the Africanic, you know, people.
So they came over from Africa.
That's right.
Right. Now let me just throw this out there, Mel. Is it possible that the depiction was not an African or an Asian elephant, it was a woolly mammoth? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
No, it's an elephant.
It is, okay.
Because it is in profile, and it's a perfect elephant with its trunk up and everything.
Okay, so again, here the takeaway is that the Olmecs, which predate the Aztecs and the Mayans, that the Olmecs landed in South and Central America after crossing the ocean from Africa— obviously.
Well, somehow they ended up. Mr. Zachariah Sitchin, he wrote that, you know, they were brought by, you know, in there to mine whatever ore they had to mine.
Yeah. You know what? We really need to throw out a lot of our history textbooks.
That's true.
It's just, you know.
But I was totally flabbergasted when I saw it. I'm like, oh my gosh, there it is.
There it is.
Open.
You
know?
Found it.
Like, they couldn't hide that.
Not from you, Mel. They couldn't get it past you. Thank you for checking in. A pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks to Ian and Albert and Ryan. Back next week with a brand new program. Hope you'll be along for the ride. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.